Hi, this is Lynn, and we are back. Chef Chris's emergency has been resolved, so we're in good shape, and we are going to bring you Foodies on the 5th, the show about all things culinary with an emphasis on HFC's culinary program. Views and opinions expressed on Foodies on the 5th are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, and I'm Lynn, your host, and today we're discussing HFC culinary with Chef Chris. And let me see how our reception is. Say hello, Chris.
Hi, Lynn. How's everybody? How's everybody doing out there today?
Keep going.
All right. Well, today
we're perfect.
All right. Good.
All right. Life is good. Okay. So many things have happened over the course of the last year. So I wanted to really, really get into this is like brand new information here.
We started
January of 16.
Yep.
We started a four-year culinary program, which is very exciting.
Very much so.
Other departments who are looking at getting into that four-year degree business, if you will.
That's right.
So that's too is exciting. So from January until almost the end of the year, how did it go? How was the first year?
It's doing fantastic, Lynn. Right now, we've got 36 students in our program, and it's growing. So we've got a lot of community interested in joining with us to come on to our four-year degree program. We are doing a little evaluation of it, seeing what we want to change a little bit about it so that we're right on tone of what the community wants from us. And the fact is starting out a brand new four-year degree program, which was authorized by the state government, in the sense of Governor Snyder was the one that signed in the bill that allowed community colleges to have a four-year degree program.
Okay.
And there were only certain programs that were going to be allowed to have that four-year degree program. Culinary arts, marine technology, cement technology, a couple different other programs that were out there that are being offered in other community colleges.
Okay.
And so when Henry Ford Community College heard about it, we said, we've got to take a stab at it. So we went ahead and stepped up, developed our programming to take us on to a four-year degree program. And we established ourselves. And other things that occurred, too, that really helped us push forward was to be recognized by the American Culinary Federation with our reaccreditation with our culinary program as well as our baking and pastry program. So we actually got two leads in that aspect there. So we both have, not only do we have a culinary program, but we also now have a baking pastry certificate program where you can walk out with a certified culinarian and a certified pastry culinarian. Title on your names. And so that helped to lead into bringing in that four-year degree program with our operations here. And building up our hotel restaurant management degree program, it all made connectional senses to pull all that together and say, let's go for that bachelor's degree. It also helped bring about our full staffing now. So we have our full staff on board with our full-time instructors that are helping out with those aspects to take us to that next level of knowledge base that people want to see out there. But we're not the only division that's actually beneficially winning from this program. It's the English department, it's the poli-sci department, it's the arts department. They're all integrating with us because of the fact that we have classes through their divisions that have linking ins with us. So they're benefiting out that they're helping to build our four-year degree program, but they're also gaining opportunities to have more teaching from their instructors also.
Right, sure. So third and fourth year English classes are a part of it, even
that's
if
right.
it's not culinary per se.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Business management and so forth. So the business divisions, accelerating at with us also. And I know there's been discussion about bringing on the nursing program and a couple other programs here on the campus because the fact that at first they were going to do it, and then the governor didn't sign on that aspect of the regulations, so that fell apart. And they're re-talking again with the governor saying, can we do it again? And he's like, yeah, let's think about it, you know, because the fact that I know for a lot of the larger universities that have nursing programs, they were worried about losing student bodies to their divisions and taking it on to a community college level. But in reality, we're helping to build that next stepping stone. Even if you finish a bachelor's degree here, we're going to get you out to another college for a four-year degree program and finish up with a master's degree program.
Sure, sure.
You know, so there's a lot of benefits to that aspect there.
And this all goes back, I know some people are not aware of the name change and some people are not aware of why the name change, but Henry Ford Community College became Henry Ford College May 10th, 14, was it?
Yeah, May 10th, 14th. Yeah.
And the name change was to indicate that you now can get a four-year degree from here.
Correct.
So that's pretty exciting.
And for a lot of our students, it's a benefit for them because they would rather stay here on campus with us And it's leading to the fact that now they don't have to go anywhere. They can stay right with us and continue on with us.
Right.
And walk out. Okay, finish up your associate's degree, turn back around, literally go right through the turnstile door again, come back in, and now you're on your bachelor's degree program. So for a lot of our students, depending on where they're coming from, it was a benefit to them because of the fact that I don't have to go look around to get another college going on this aspect.
That, better tuition, and rather than going someplace, you're able to stay at home for a couple of years and save,
very much so.
Save a little bit of money.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay. What else should we talk about? You just had a bake sale.
Well, we just had our bake sale. We just had our holiday Thanksgiving bake sale, and it was a success. The fact is that as we make the indication in our programming specials about that, culinary students prepare pastries and baked goods that bring family memories together. Gives the people that want to come in and buy products from us chances to enjoy their families and their friends without having to worry about baking up pies and pumpkin roulades and cheesecakes and so forth. We help take care of that aspect of it. So it frees up their holiday for themselves to enjoy their family and friends. So we've got one coming up in the springtime. It will probably be just before Easter. Probably around March or so. I can't give you the exact date yet, but I know it'll be coming up forward. So it's a great success. Again, it's an opportunity for our students to learn about production work and be able to see what it means to be a commercial bakery and be able to realize that you're making 500-600 pies within a couple weeks, being able to produce that material and be able to understand what volume production is about. So it gives the opportunity for the students to realize that it is an aspect of the industry that people go into, and you can be successful at it. If you go into a production house where you're doing volume, at least now you're comfortable with what it's all about. And so for many of our students, they may be working in a small family-run restaurant, but then they want to step up to something larger, and it's a completely different game when you go into a volume production house.
Right.
So.
Okay, Easter is April 16th.
Okay. So it'll probably be a week, maybe 2 weeks ahead of that. So beginning of, you know, end of March, beginning of April will be when it would be, you know, our spring bake sale.
Right. And I talked to somebody today, as a matter of fact. I said this was her first trip to one of the bake sales.
Okay.
And I said, how was everything? What did you think? And she just started drooling talking about the pumpkin roll. So that was her favorite thing of all things.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear a positive response from our customers. I mean, we do get a few negative responses periodically, but we handle those in the right way.
Sure.
As professionals. Mm-hmm. You know, these are students that are learning how to bake. They may make a mistake, and we, not, as professionals, might not catch it.
Right, right.
But the fact is, we have to teach them how to handle a customer, how to professionally handle them.
Right.
So it's not just throw them off the curb and say, oh, thanks for coming here, but we don't want to deal with you. No, we got to help them out and understand what it's all about.
Right. I this is a little, well, it's on point, but a little bit off from an interview. But what were those cherries in the cherry crumb pie? Because they were very dark.
They were actually Bing cherries.
Okay.
So we actually made all of our own homemade filling in our cherry pies this year.
Oh, my gosh.
So the fact is I use a sweet cherry instead of a sour cherry, and we actually make our own filling from it, and then I said, let's make it up. So I said, it's something different. It had a little cinnamon behind it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it was just seasoned just right where people were like, perfect, you know, and that's what I look for is to make sure when I'm doing pastry work, I want subtlety in flavors, but I don't want to overkill somebody saying, here, it's cinnamon.
Right,
you know,
right.
Let it give that little warmth and that little heat, and people enjoy it. And I said they can serve it with whipped cream on it or a little powdered sugar on it. And for most Americans, as I can put it this way, we love our pies, you know, and if they're done right, I mean, we had a couple customers come to us and said, this is the best flaky pie dough we've ever had. So the fact is we know the technique of making that good flaky pie dough, making that good mealy pie dough, and making sure those pies look professional.
Oh, they did. You know? They, and I was a hero at Thanksgiving when I took it.
Good.
I had mine with a fork.
Okay.
Didn't want to get carried away.
Sure.
Back in August, we talked to Jeff Lowe about the Ice Carving Club, which was starting up in September.
Sure.
And so they've had some time to do a few things. Days like today, it's not very favorable to have the ice outside.
Well, they were out there last night carving ice in the rain. They had tents up, things like that, but they were still carving underneath the weather. And the fact is Chef Lau and the Ice Carving Club, it's their season. They're coming into their season. For now, the next 8 to 10 weeks, they'll be doing different competition shows around the area.
Right.
Plymouth, Frankenmuth, Trenton, Taylor. They're all over the city doing display pieces for the community. And for many students, it's a club that's open to everybody on campus. So you don't have to be a culinary student to come into the Ice Carving Club as well as the Baking Club. But the fact is for some of these students, they don't even realize that it is an art form. And once they realize that you're carving ice and you're sculpting things in many ways, they're learning a new technique.
Right.
And so for many of them, they're like, oh, I've never handled a power tool in my life. But once they understand the safety rules and regulations with it, they do beautiful work.
Right. Power tool is kind of an understatement when you talk about a chainsaw.
Chainsaw, die grinder, sanders, the whole gamut out there. But for many students, they're afraid of those tools because it's a weapon. You know,
sure.
When you really think about it, they could be injured quite easily with it. And
certainly.
If they pay respect to understanding the safety rules and regulations to doing ice carving, they can do a great job at it. And just a couple weeks ago, they had the Richard Teeple Invitational here out on campus.
Aww.
And so it was Macomb Community College, Henry Ford College, Oakland Community College, and University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. So they came in. They actually have an ice carving club out there also. And they don't even have a culinary program at the University of Michigan,
right.
Ann Arbor. But it's students that want to learn ice carving. One of the instructors helps run the club.
Okay.
And they get a chance to play around with the ice cubes, as we can call it.
Okay.
But we did well at it. I think we took a second and third place in the competition.
Excellent.
Macomb took first. We're not upset with them, but we're learning. You know, it's what they call competition.
Absolutely.
And it helps to develop those students so that they can understand that, guess what? There's all time somebody that's going to win the top dog, and somebody's going to have to be second dog. But hopefully the second place winner becomes the first place winner down the road.
Tell us, for those who don't know, tell us a little bit about Richard Teeple, who he is.
Chef Teeple was previously one of our culinary instructors here in the division. He recently retired 3 years ago, and he's found some other interest to keep himself occupied, but he was the gentleman that started up the Ice Carving Club and really developed bringing forward the art of ice in the metropolitan Detroit area.
Really?
30 years ago, he got involved with Peter Lorenz, who was from the Mayflower Hotel in Plymouth. And they wanted to make something go in January in the middle of Plymouth Township, in downtown Plymouth, in the Kellogg's Park. And so Chef Richard Teeple and the owners of the Mayflower Hotel got together and they talked about it and said, what's the big thing that's going to draw people in? And they came about saying, let's do an ice show. So they started out with a small ice show. And the Mayflower owners decided to go to Japan. They went to see some of the ice shows in Japan. They got involved with finding out what chefs were interested in traveling here to the United States. They invited them here. They took care of them. They got them to fly in with them. And they'd have them do major displays. And then it led into the community colleges starting to work on the ice carving. So it was Henry Ford, Schoolcraft, OCC, Macomb, Monroe Community College, Washtenaw Community College. Even Ann Arbor, University of Michigan, Ann Arbor was able to carve ice. So all these community colleges started coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And it grew to the point where it was the largest ice carving show in North America. And so the fact it took off, and the idea has been going now, it's 32 years old now. So It was a way of not only the Mayflower Hotel benefiting, because that was a slow time of season for business, but it brought people to the community of Plymouth. It brought people out in the middle of winter and said, there's something fun to do out here, and to go and see an ice carving show, even if it's snowing and it's bitter cold, it draws people into the restaurants, into the clothing stores, and all the outlets that are out in Plymouth. And it slowly branched out that other communities said, hang on, we got to take some deals too. So Frankenmuth got involved with it. And it just started blooming out. All these cities started having ice carving shows throughout the metropolitan Detroit area, and it just drew people in like crazy. And it was the fact that it benefited the community.
And again, HFC's is an award-winning
very
team.
Much so. Very much
definitely.
So. Yeah.
We are short on time a little bit, and I wanted to talk about, we're getting into the Christmas season.
Very much so.
And my portion control, whenever I plan anything, is always portion out of control. And so I was looking for some ideas for cocktail party, entertaining for the holidays. A reasonable menu for a cocktail party, and then let's talk about a dinner party after that.
Sure. Well, for a cocktail party, when we think about dealing with cocktails, there's two ways to look at it. It could be a sit-down cocktail party, where people are, you know, enjoying socializing, but then sitting down and relaxing. There's other times where you can just have people standing up and socializing that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
But for many people, during the holidays, they throw the control of portion control out the window because everything looks so delicious. But for many people, my suggestion would be, instead of going to a party on an empty stomach, have something light first before you go to the party.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're not filling up on everything. Oh, there's the shrimp and there's the lobster tail and there's this and there's that. And the next thing you're like, hang on, I just did 5,000 calories in my diet, where that's a whole day's worth of meal. So the fact is when you think about a menu for something as a cocktail party, keep it light and refreshing. And also keep it in a seasonal theme. When I say a seasonal theme, work with things that are in season for fruits and vegetables. Okay, for many people, they go out and they spend the big dollars on the raspberries, the strawberries, the blueberries, because that's what's looking beautiful right now. You don't have to think that way. Think about what fruits were in season in October and November, where you've got the apples, so you can make a cobbler. So make small items and take the portion size down smaller, and it'll keep people satisfied. When I say thinking about hors d'oeuvre party, think about comfort foods that many people feel comfortable eating. Mm-hmm. It could be even a soup.
And I never want anybody to be hungry. So that's where my portion out of control comes in, because I want to make more.
Sure. And the fact is, you know, if you're going to do a soup course, as an example, instead of doing a bowl of soup, do it as a little shooter. You know, so it's a small martini glass of soup.
Interesting
idea. It could be a cold soup. It could be a warm soup, you know, depending on what it is that you want to present. But starting out something like that, that way it's something small. Everybody can get a little taste. They're satisfied. If you're doing a cream-based soup, that fattiness in that soup makes feel more comfortable. Moving into then going into something that's warm. It could be, you know, a warm appetizer. It could be a small appetizer of, say, if you want to go to expense, you can go to a beef tenderloin. But if you want to keep the cost down on items, you can do a nice braised beef shoulder. You know, where the cost isn't as expensive, but the flavor is there.
Okay.
And so you can portion that down into smaller units.
And what are we doing with that, little mini sandwiches?
Or? I could do like a miniature slider. I could do it as a small filet dough cup with some nice beef and some nice horseradish sauce to go along with it. Keep it real clean and traditional. Mm-hmm. You know, think about when you think about a prime rib with served with horseradish sauce, take it and shrink it down. You know, miniaturize it. Mm-hmm. Instead of buying the jumbo shrimp, buy some miniature shrimp. Make a nice little shrimp cocktail out of it. Not in the sense of shrimp cocktail with shrimp cocktail sauce, but make a nice little sauce with it. Put it into a nice little cracker or a toast point. Keep it very petite portion. And people will enjoy that, because now if you make it small, then they can take a little more variety. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to be going, oh, I'm, you know, I've got this plate of food and what am I going to do with it? Mm-hmm. I only eat one quarter and the rest of it goes to the waste.
Right.
So including even in pastries, I take my pastries and I shrink everything down to a smaller size so people truly have a chance to enjoy a little variety pack of food items.
So depending on the timing of the cocktail party too, whether we're starting at, you know, 4 in the afternoon, which crosses over dinner time, or whether we have people coming at 7, presumably you've eaten a little bit more at that point. How many, I'm not sure if we should talk courses or if we should talk about items that you would want on your...
For a person, let's say you're just doing an hors d'oeuvre party, portion size, I would estimate 5 to 7 portions per person.
Okay.
And that's bite size style. Mm-hmm. That's as only if it's only hors d'oeuvres. But if you're having, say, an hors d'oeuvre with, say, partial sit-down meal, then you can go down to 3 portions per person. So 3 bite-size items per person. So this way you're controlling how much you're having to produce, because for so many people, they don't know how to produce volume for friends and family.
Right.
They just start cooking, and it's like, oh, I think I got enough. And it's like, well, you're out of mashed potatoes. You're out of this. You're out of that.
Yeah.
And so people don't really understand how much to purchase or how much items change when you cook them, especially beef or pork, things like that. They'll shrink down in size, things like that. So the fact is as a professional chef, we try to take some of the more inexpensive cuts of meats and turn them into exotic flavors.
Okay.
And that's what a lot of people think about. It's like, oh, well, we don't have to do chicken breasts. Why don't we do dark meat, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Utilize the underutilized cuts of meat on a animal or a vegetable, even in the sense of saying, but we try to figure out different ways of utilizing those things to their own degree.
Pate is a great user-upper.
Very much so. And for many people, it's an item that they have to get used to, understanding what a pate is about and what the flavors could be.
Mm-hmm.
But we could do a nice autumn harvest pate where we're doing, you know, it could be even venison, because I know we just went through deer season, things like that. But even taking a pork item or a chicken item, instead of using the white meat, we're using the dark meat. Maybe we take the white meat and we turn it into a roulade where we're stuffing it with a nice force meat that could be a pate meat and then cooking it together and then thinly slicing that off. And it's something that somebody can really enjoy. Even doing small sausages, as an example, you can take a cheap cut of meat, flavor it up, season it up properly, and make a nice little sausage out of it, and that could be a nice little garnish item that people can enjoy.
Okay. Would you recommend having both sweet and savory?
Certainly.
Okay.
Very much so. There's a lot of merging the two flavors into one nowadays. The fact that people are starting to understand what savory food is, what sweet foods are. And so hot and cold, sweet and savory, crunch and creaminess. It's all these textures as we think about growing up as a young child. We have grown from enjoying foods that were purees to foods that are body substance, you know, standards. And so as any adult, any human being, we like variety in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I look at food, is just give a little variety of everything, and it appeases everybody.
Okay.
Even with cheeses, you know, in the sense of saying, doing a cheese platter or a vegetable platter, a crudité platter.
Mm-hmm.
I like to make my crudité platter so they're interactive. So it's like, okay, beautiful arrangements of vegetables, but now I've got different dips. What's the different dips? It could be a hummus dip. It could be a oil vinaigrette dip. It could be a nice creamy dip, whatever it could be. It could be a Thousand okay. Island or something like that.
Sure.
Or it could be a Green Goddess, things like that. So you've got a little bit of different flavors, and it's like, how can you change that? Maybe there's an accompaniment with a hummus, maybe there's some black olives that have been marinated differently and things like that. So it all complements what you're pushing in and enjoying for yourself.
So let's say, for example, I have a cocktail party for, let's say, 20 people.
Mm-hmm.
How many different items would you recommend for a group like that?
A group of 20, I would probably suggest 5 to 6 different hors d'oeuvres to enjoy. And if you want to do it, you could go with 2 hot hors d'oeuvres and the rest could be cold hors d'oeuvres.
Okay.
So this way you're not working yourself to death trying to make all these hot items up.
Right.
But those items can be pre-made. They can be warmed up in an oven, preheated up, and that way you're not rushing at the last minute to put them together.
Mm-hmm.
Stuffed mushrooms are a great example of utilizing things where they're already a pre-made container.
Mm-hmm.
Take the stem off, hollow it out a little bit, put your nice little filling into it, put it in the oven, bake it off, boom, it's a nice little warm hors d'oeuvre to enjoy.
Okay. All right.
You can even make a nice mushroom duxelle that goes within the mushroom itself, so you're utilizing different components of that mushroom.
Right.
So for a lot of people, they'll take that stem and they'll say, I'll throw it away. No, it's something edible.
Right.
And so it's utilizing it, turning it back into something else, you know. A little pork pate or maybe a little ground pork with some duxelle mushrooms or dried cherries. That could be your little compliment with that. And then put a little shredded cheese on top of that, cook it all together, and it's delicious.
So as you're looking at your number, this is where I'm looking to get the portion under control.
Sure.
Maybe one item per every 4 to 5 people.
Yeah. Okay. Very much so. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then in the sense saying, if you think about it in the sense saying 3 to 4 portions per person,
mm-hmm.
you say 20 people, you're looking at 60 to 80 portions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you divide that amongst 5 items, that's a couple hundred pieces.
Right.
That'll keep everybody happy. That'll be more than enough to keep everybody happy. And, you know, my statement when I think about it as inviting friends over, I'll try to make more because I send them home with items.
Right.
Here's a care package. Go home and enjoy yourself. And a lot of people love that because it's their opportunity to say, hey, thanks for the holidays. You know, mm-hmm. we all stress out during the holidays, but the holidays are meant for family and friends.
Right.
To realize
exactly.
that it's, you know, time to spend time with people that we don't get a chance to see all the time.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now we're going to take it up a step.
Sure.
And let's talk about dinner. So we pretty much have 3 ways we could approach it, and we can mix and match a little bit too. Maybe we have a buffet appetizer and a sit-down dinner something like that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the differences between what does it mean to have a buffet, what does it mean to have plate, and what does it mean to have family style?
Okay. Let me start out with family style. For most people, you'll be familiar with family style because of wedding receptions. If you go to, I don't know, any religion, you know, any type of gathering of people, it's usually piles of food stuff on plates and it's stuck in the middle of the table and everybody digs into it. That's considered a family style. That's an out of control party, you know, because the fact that it's a reload. A good example would be Zenders in Frankenmuth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a family style meal.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is presented in front of you on a platter or a plate, and then you portion out what you want. If you want more, they bring you more. And that's how a family style is run. That's where the control is not controlled.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
In a plated presentation, as a chef, as a cook in the kitchen, you're portioning out every bit of the product that goes out to the guest, to your guests and to yourself. And that's a lot more controllable. If you're going to do prime rib, I would rather do it as a sit-down than as a buffet or as a family style. But in a family style or as a buffet style, you can take some of the inexpensive cuts and make them look exotic, make them look unique, and stretch them out by adding vegetables into them or putting a sauerkraut underneath them or something like that, some type of filler that actually makes the dish look bigger. But in reality, you're stretching what you're putting into those platters, okay? And in a buffet style, that's another free-for-all. Anybody that wants to grab everything and everything, as I say, the feed trough come out and everybody fills up their plates so they're 4 feet deep and they go, oh, I can't eat all this stuff.
Mm.
So their eyes get bigger than their bellies, and their bellies can't handle what they want. And so for a buffet style, if you're going to do 50, 60 guests, you could do a buffet, but you could also cut down the cost. I know many friends, when they do a party like that, they'll say, BYOB, bring your own dish, you know, and they pass around a dish. So it doesn't put all the stress on one person to do the party. It brings it out to everybody brings something. Oh, you're going to bring a crudité platter. You're going to bring a vegetable dip. You're going to bring in this item. I'm going to bring a hot item in. And it spreads it amongst everybody. And then this way they can all enjoy what everybody brings in, because everybody could be a different nationality. And we have all these international meals then.
Right.
And variety comes to flavors. And people go, oh, I've never had this type of dish. Maybe it's an Indian dish or maybe it's a Arabic dish. But they all appreciate what everybody's putting on the table then.
Right. Okay. So far as catering goes, if you do go to the hall and you want some party of 50 to 100 people, as you said. I think family style is always the most expensive because you have to have the most food available.
That's right.
And that gets a little bit tricky so far as how you handle the leftovers, because it's like the feeding of the 5,000, where, you know, when you gather...
the multiply of the loaves.
Yeah.
Here you go. Here's your food.
when you gather all the leftovers, suddenly you have enough for another 100 people. And plate style, of course, is the most controlled.
But it's also sometimes the most expensive, too. Because the fact it's considering the most dishware to be pushed onto the table, in the sense of it's depending on what you're pushing on it. If you're doing surf and turf, it could be $65 a person for dinner. So the fact is, you've got to look and say, how much do you really want to spend for your family and friends? Are they worth that $65? Are they worth $25? Are they worth $35? Where do you want to put the market at?
Right.
You know.
And then buffet, you never know what's going to go. You know, as the chef, you're never sure. And if you're in a home kitchen with a limited number of, you know, you bought what you thought was correct. And all of a sudden, there you are, out of mashed potatoes.
Out of mashed potatoes. Oh, the mustard chili's running low. What do I got to do? Boil some more pasta, stretch the sauce. Got to do this, got to do that. And we think about buffets, and you think about, okay, a chicken dish, a beef dish, a mustard chili dish. The variety pack is there. But we try to give everybody something that everybody will be comfortable with, saying, oh yeah, well, I'm on a low-carb diet, okay? And so they've got to change things around. Or maybe I like chicken, but I don't like pork. You know, maybe I don't want beef, but I like the chicken again. So it changes around. It gives people a chance to enjoy a variety of food items.
Okay, we're down to just a few more minutes, and we have Daddy G on deck over here.
Good afternoon, Daddy G.
Getting loaded here. In a good way.
Don't give me any ideas away.
Loaded in a good way. We're talking about all this holiday food and beverages and what have you.
Oh, geez, oh, pizza elixirs?
The one thing, like I said, we're down to just a couple minutes, but the one thing we didn't talk about was the 5101 for this past semester. This is the last week.
Today and tomorrow and Thursday are our last days. We've got lunch and dinner tomorrow and dinner Thursday evening. It'll be the end for the last of the 12 weeks different programming. We've done well. Again, we're going to be closing down until mid-February, so we'll be opening up back in February again once we come through the new year.
What is this week's theme?
This week is Northwest Pacific.
Okay.
So it's surf and turf, crab legs and prime rib. So the fact is, it's a great meal to come in for, reasonably priced, good food.
Salmon?
And there might not be any salmon today. I don't think there is.
Okay. Lynn. I'm just curious. Whenever I think Northwest, that's what I always think about, is the salmon from that area. Anything? Oh, I'll tell you what. People who are interested, today was lunch. Tomorrow and Thursday are lunch and dinner.
Correct.
And people should probably make reservations. And, and who should they call?
Well, they can go on to the HFC website, Henry Ford College website, look up the culinary department, HFC.culinary.com. They'll be able to connect into the restaurant listing, and then they'll be able to find the phone number there for the restaurant. And it's the 5101 restaurant. And they'll be able to talk to either Valencia or Lauren, who is our manager of the dining room. And they can make reservations up. Because I know in the evening hours for the dinner, it's going to be a lot more busier during the daytime comparatively. And so it's great to make reservations. This way you don't miss out on this great final dinner with us for the semester. And then we'll be back in February.
If you heard it, would you know it?
Yeah, I probably would.
I think it's 313-317-5101.
Yeah, that's what it is. I think
okay,
so. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
So that's the number right down if you'd like to make reservations and try some of these phenomenal things that Chef Chris has cooking up in the kitchen over at the 5101. 313-317-5101. They're open right now. And if you call at a time when the restaurant is closed and you want to leave a message, they're really quick to get back
very
to you.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Any parting holiday thoughts for us to consider?
Well, I think for most people, it's time to realize that it's a busy time of the year for many people, especially for chefs. We're all the time trying to be pleasing to everybody, but sometimes that doesn't happen. But to realize to enjoy the holiday seasons ahead of us with our friends and families so that we can be around for another healthy and healthy new year ahead of us.
Sounds like a plan. All righty. And here we go. That works better. Okay, here we go. Thank you, Chris, for being here on Foodies on the Fifth.
No problem.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you all for listening to Foodies on the Fifth, a show all about things culinary, with an emphasis on HFC's culinary program. The views and opinions expressed on Foodies on the Fifth are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. And this is WHFR Dearborn. The next Foodies on the Fifth is coming up. You know, these things are never even.
No.
It's four times per year, and
right.
That's a divisible by 12, but
right.
It doesn't work that way.
Nope.
So the next Foodies on the Fifth will be January
28th.
Now,
31st. January 31st,
January
2017.
January 31st. There we go. 2017, a whole new year, and we'll have something interesting to talk about when we figure out what's going on at that point.
That's right.
All right. Thanks so much, Chris.
No problem.
Thank you so much for listening to Foodies on the Fifth.